Invite you here by attention. We'll go ahead and start the meeting. It's 10 o'clock, so we'll get things going. First thing we've got on the agenda is the approval of minutes from last meeting. Got a motion for approval.
I'll make a motion.
Got a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next, on the agenda, we've got old business, project update, and that's Laura.
I'm going to start out with the City of Evansville's Oak Hill Road project. This is phase two from Pigeon Creek to Lynch Road. The progress has slowed due to the weather, but the project is currently on track for completion in July of this year. Moving on to the Washington Avenue-Weinbach Avenue intersection, right-of-way acquisition continues. Skipping to page three, for the town of Newburgh, we have the Newburgh River Town Trail. The town council signed an updated contract for funding with NDOT on December 11th. And for the Newburgh sign replacement, the council is awaiting review and approval of the CEF, the cost effectiveness form, which was revised and resubmitted in November. For Warrick County, we have the Lincoln Avenue project, phase two, and all the work on this project is now complete. I think they had extended the deadline to add some pavement markings and signs. And I think that's all the updates that we have this month. Are there any questions about those or discussion about any of the other projects?
If nobody has any questions, we'll move on to the next item, and that's Regional Plan for Sustainable Development. Update from BLA, Dave Goffman.
Thanks, John. Mike Shelders and I are here to talk a little bit about the case of why regional sustainable planning is kind of a perfect opportunity. All the stars aligned essentially for us to take a good hard look at our metropolitan region and planning and look at more sustainable ways to make that happen. And so wanted to kind of go through today a little bit of a presentation with you about why sustainable planning. But to kind of make sure you're aware of this, coming up in March, we're going to be back in front of this group and as well the policy committee presenting our final draft of the actual plan, and we'll go into a lot of the detail of the particular projects and initiatives that will be a part of it. We're not going to do that today. Frankly, what we wanted to kind of do today is take 15, 20 minutes, run through, and help again kind of lay out the case of why this is the ideal time for our region to plan sustainably and to really set the groundwork now so that when we get to the future, if you will, we won't have done anything to encumber our ability or inhibit our ability, I should say, of being what we want to be when we're there. So that's kind of what our intent is today, and thought I would run through this with you. The MPO, and I know there are a lot of them here, the staff and those that aren't on staff, know that their charge is planning, and their primary focus is transportation for this region. But if not their sole focus, any planning that's involved with transportation takes a long, hard look at land use, and the interaction between Ron and his group with the MPO staff is absolutely critical, because ultimately land use drives transportation as much as transportation does land use. And arguably, transportation can actually get in the way of land use just as land use can get in the way of transportation if they aren't communicating. So the communication between those two is so important. And they have a lot of tools that they use to do this planning. You've heard of travel demand models, and they have now a land use model, and we've developed scenarios, and those scenarios are informing those models. And what's informed the scenarios has been our outreach with the public. And over the last 3 years, we've had a unique opportunity to reach out to the public in this region in a way that truthfully just couldn't have been afforded previously. Literally afforded from the time commitment and the monetary commitment. And because of the grant that the NPL secured, they were able to commit to a planning to a level they've never been able to before. And again, we've captured what the public interest is. We've allowed that to feed and technical advisors through our committees and stakeholders that have been involved, and that has informed our scenarios, and the scenarios are informing the models, and it all sounds real technical, but hey, you're the technical committee, and that's what you guys think about, right? Well, maybe, maybe not, but I will tell you that the input of the public is so important, and for us to look at trends regionally and nationally is critical too. So that's kind of what I want to talk about right now. So if we're going to develop a regional plan for sustainable development, it in itself, it implies that we wish to be a sustainable community. Now, community is a very amorphous term. It can be everything from literally a small town to a county or a group of common interest folks. But ultimately, HUD has developed a definition of a sustainable community, and you notice that it can be urban, suburban, or rural. It's not simply one of those three. It's any of those, with more housing and transportation choices that are closer to jobs, shops, and schools. It's more energy independent, and it helps protect clean air and water. Okay, that's what HUD has outlined as the definition of a sustainable community. So if that's what we aspire to be, we got to figure out how we get there. Now, I think it's important that you understand that as we've been developing this plan over the last 3 years, there have been some underlying tenets, principles that we've been following that really have guided us as we've taken the information from the public and our committees and the staff, and we've distilled it all and created this plan. And I wanted to kind of talk through each one of those a little, because I think it's important that you understand that when we come back to you in March, what we're bringing to you has kind of run through this process. Infill development, there are a number of reasons, and if you'll bear with me, I have a few of these jotted down that I want to make sure I didn't forget. It's development within corporate city limits or town limits or incorporated areas. Okay, so it can be on greenfield areas that have not previously been developed yet within the city limits, but it is also, it could be on vacant lots, it can be situations where you might have blighted properties, raise the homes, reconstruct either a similar or unique housing opportunity, grayfield sites, repurposing, redeveloping grayfield sites. Ultimately, the key point behind this focus on infill development is that the municipals have already committed funds to provide the necessary infrastructure. It may need a little upgrading and so forth, but primarily they're there. The roads, the sewer, the water, the electric, the things that are necessary are there. Again, they may need a little bit of work, but ultimately there. And then what's so key about that is local investment. Hey, that's okay. It's that local investment piece, which is the investment's already there. So the cost to develop in those areas is lesser on the municipalities. And as well, the ability to increase your property tax revenues in an area because you're improving within on typically smaller lots and so forth. So you have more homes and you can have a certain amount of area, you can achieve more tax revenues than on larger lots and so forth. Another tenet is walkable neighborhoods. Proximity to kind of necessary amenities is key in a walkable neighborhood. Green space, walking facilities, biking facilities, the places to run, literally, for exercise and so forth. Access to public transit, and then all of these, you know, so why is that so important? Is it a want factor? Yes, but there's another factor. Health. The general health and well-being of our society, which will lead to decreases in healthcare costs, which ultimately we've got to keep those in mind. That's important, and it can really, again, impact the local municipalities who provide insurance for employees and so forth, and it can affect us as a community as well. And ultimately, you're going to see improved air quality if we do see a reduction in the use of the typical transportation mode, which is the vehicle. Okay, workforce housing. We've got a lot of it here in Evansville and Henderson, in Boonville. In all of our counties, we have a lot of it. It's safe to say that some of it's deteriorating. We've got to put a real concerted effort on preserving what's there. And, as well, we need to look at possibilities of raising again where it's in bad shape, rebuilding either similar types or multifamily units in those locations. And the key behind preservation of workforce housing is that if housing is considered workforce, it's because its proximity is close to the job. People actually can walk to their job if they live close enough. They can bike. They can live without necessarily being so dependent on a car and use public transit to get to places like the mall or various other places that they couldn't walk to. And not be so auto-dependent, okay? And then development along transportation arteries. Where we see new development that does occur outside of necessarily corporate limits, let's try and make sure it happens near major transportation arteries, and let's make sure it's mixed use, okay? So that you have a variety of housing choices, a variety of costs for those housing options. There's commercial opportunities, so folks can actually get some of the basic amenities, groceries. They can not have to leave via vehicle to go get milk or necessarily to take care, again, of some of the basic needs. Make them walkable, whether that be through a trail system or some sidewalks or accommodation. They need to be walkable, and that there needs to be transit access to those locations. And why it's so important to stay on those major arteries is that the infrastructure road-wise is already in place. And if in the future we get the types of densities that are needed to promote bus rapid transit, which is that kind of that next level of transit opportunity, it's incumbent upon us to develop in areas along those likely transit lines, not dispersed away from. Okay? And then, in terms of protection of sensitive areas, here, one of our most sensitive areas is farm property. We have literally got to do a better job of protecting our farm ground because we continue to consume it for non-farm purposes. Okay? We also have drainage issues. The more we develop into natural drainage areas and make them not so natural anymore, the more pressure we put on our stormwater. We have great natural habitat here. It's some of our finest assets. We've got to protect them. Okay. So, what are national trends telling us? Well, this millennial group, the generation that my son is in and my daughter is quickly working her way into and my other as well, their preference is different than our preference. They may have been raised in that suburban environment. They may have mowed our grass and helped us take care of those larger lots. They don't want it. And their argument is they don't think they're going to want it for a long time, if ever. Okay? That's a changed condition. I didn't want it young, but I thought I might want it later. I don't believe my children feel the same way, and yours may not feel the same way either. Okay? They're completely content with the cities providing parks and pools and trails, and they're content with raising children downtown or in a city, and those kinds of things, again, that's a change. They don't see the home as a good investment anymore. If you think about it, I understand why. It's their grandparents that saw their homes triple or quadruple in value. They watched their parents, in some cases, see their homes go upside down 5-6 years ago. They don't see a home as an investment tool anymore. It's a place to sleep. Okay? So keep that in mind. That's national trends. This is what it's telling us. Baby boomers, same kinds of things. They prefer, it's this whole Asian place. They love the home, but they realize that the maintenance and upkeep of that home might be a burden at some point. They're looking for viable alternative living arrangements. But they do want to be able to walk and get out. They want to be able to go to a coffee shop easily. They want some of these conveniences. They do like to be entertained, the arts and so forth. So they'd like to be close to that. And a national statistic there, you can take a look at it if you so choose. But it's basically saying the demand on townhomes is a classic situation that they're seeing. That's the whole baby boomer group is leaning towards. And that's probably not one of our strong suits here in this region, as I see everybody grin. Okay, nationally, no different than us. Our infrastructure is aging. We don't have the budget dollars that we had before to take care of them. Every time we extend further out, even if we try and pass that cost on to the developer, ultimately we maintain it. All right? So it still becomes a burden on us. This environment is a national trend, and all of the urbanized areas realize that their tax base would improve by getting people back into the urban areas that they could begin to start making a dent in some of the maintenance they need as well. We're getting smarter. You know, used to we tracked consumption of gas, water, electricity, simply the building. That was it. Now we need to get paid. Now we know we lose water. We know when our water system underground that you can't see is losing water because we can track it so much better. We are becoming more conscious of these things as a nation. And so we realize being good stewards is important. We have to be good stewards of all our resources as they diminish. Now, let's look at some trends relative to housing. Walk through these. We're seeing an unfortunate situation where the demand is not being met by the supply in some key areas. The first is the tax homes, multifamily homes. Nationally, we're falling 10% short on supplying what's needed. Look at small lots. Okay? Again, the demand is nearly, it's 8% higher than what we're providing. And the one place that it seems is still the Midwest focus is this large lot concept. We have far more supply now than the market is demanding. Okay? It's a national trend. And while we may be 10 years behind in some things or we think we are, this one's hitting us now. We have to remember that we can't say that we'll keep doing it until it catches up. Otherwise, we're going to end up with stock that you can't fill. All right. Housing, transportation. HUD looks at H plus T, your housing cost plus your transportation cost. And they say a home is not sustainable if you are at 50% of your income for combined housing and transportation. And the average American family nationally is a percent over that. I would argue that we may be more auto-dependent in our region than the average American family, and I know we're not particularly strong in transit-rich neighborhoods. Okay, and again, this is national information. The way I like to look at it is just look at it from a dollars and cents standpoint. The bottom line is the more green on those pie charts, the more expendable income you have, the more you're able to feed the economy, just to go out, spend money on entertainment, do the things that help support the local economy. Right? So HUD would suggest that we've got to get the average American family a whole lot better than 51% on housing insurance. Okay. So now let's look at us. Okay. Our current regional growth trend. These, I hope, make you go, ooh. Okay. So 1990 is our population. This is for, again, the three-county area, our metropolitan area. We had that population, we had a pretty high density, I wish my pointer would work, but it doesn't, but ultimately we see as every 10 years we have more developed land and lower density of population. So regardless of what our population is, in a square mile, we're seeing less people. Okay? If we continue that trend, our projections suggest that we'll be at a density of about 1,000 in 2050. Well, let's see what that really looks like. You take a look at our region. You take all the developed land, squeeze it into a circle. In 1990, it looked like that. 2000, it looks like that. 2010, it looks like that. And if we continue as we have been, this is what it looks like in 2050. Where are the farms? They're going away. If you notice, there's a lot of red outside of our land mass, and you squeeze that in, we darn near cover all three counties. Now, if that doesn't do it for you, let's look at it this way. In green, down below, is our change of population over time from 1990 to 2050. And you can see I squeezed 2010 to 2050 in, which kind of exaggerates things. So in reality, that's a very flat line. We have a very modest population growth over time in our region. I'd like to see that change, frankly. But right now, that's what all the projections tell us, too. All right? If you look at land consumption in change terms, over that same period of time, look at what's happening here. We are literally consuming disproportionately land to our population growth. That's problematic, okay? If we could start changing that trend and just start turning it back down from 2010 to 2050 to where we can get a higher density, this is what starts to happen. Same growth circles, obviously, until the last one. And the better we do it infill, the smaller that one gets. Okay? And graphically looking at it, again, if this works better for you, you can see the axial spacing does begin to actually reduce over time. Now, I know, it's easier said than done. The proof's in the pudding in the picture, but what do we do about it? Well, we've got a lot of work ahead of us, but that's what is happening regionally. So, let's compare ourselves to some of our neighbors. We're looking at metropolitan areas, Midwest metropolitan areas. And the real key is that oftentimes people have hid behind sustainability as not a Midwest thing. We don't have the land pressure. We don't have the same pressures that they do on the West Coast and the East Coast and in Chicago and so on. Okay, then let's compare ourselves to our metropolitan regions in kind of the Ohio, Illinois, Kentucky, we went as far as Tennessee, and let's see how we're doing. Okay, we feel like we're an aging community. Is that a fair statement? We're kind of Evansville a little older than it used to be, the whole region's older than it used to be. You know what? Maybe we are, but from 2000 to 2010, we only saw 6% growth in that population. Now, you fall into that category once you hit that age. So there's a natural addition to it. But look at some of the people around us that you would say, I wouldn't have thought Lafayette was older. I wouldn't think that Bowling Green was older or Columbus, Indiana. Maybe you think that. It's Bloomington. Why are there so many more? And the answer is they're keeping more and they're attracting some of ours. The snowbird flight isn't snowbird anymore, despite how nasty it's been, which would encourage any of us to leave. They're flying somewhere, just not necessarily to Florida anymore to live. It's somewhere else. We got to get a look at that gap. All right? What about the millennials? Okay? We're seeing a steady 4% growth in our millennials, and if you track that over time, that's pretty consistent. But some are seeing a whole lot more. Some of the same ones. Lafayette, Bloomington, you say, well, yeah, they got the big universities. And we have universities, too. How come we're not growing that population in the same way they do? Are we not attracting, are we not holding these people? And I would argue, if you talk to a few folks, we're not. We got some cool things, but we don't have a focused attention towards making it cooler. And that word is completely appropriate to use when we talk about this age. It needs to be a cool place to live. Then they'll figure out where they're going to get that job. Okay? All right? This is probably not a surprise when you think about it, but the proportion of our homes that are multifamily relative to others, there is still yet a gap. So perhaps one of the points is maybe we aren't even providing them the housing choices that they want. All right? When I got out of school, I lived, well, actually even when I was in school, in an apartment, as married, then a very disgusting rental home, and then a very, very modest home. And so I went through this cycle or transition, okay? Have we provided that for this age group? And again, I think if you look at our stock, the answer is no. We really don't have the housing choices that they would want. It's just an unfortunate circumstance. Okay, this one's a real telling one, too. Committed effort towards infill development. They actually track this, which is great to know. But over the course of time, from 2000 to 2009, those regions put a concerted effort towards improving the amount of development that happens in infill. We're getting people moving back into the urban areas where we have the infrastructure and so on. We had 6.4% of our population move in and transition into the infill over that period of time. Whereas look at some of those. I mean, South Bend, 38%. Again, just looking at our neighbors, it's disheartening, but encouraging at the same time. Because my point is we give them the enticement as to why it would be great to move in and give them some opportunities to live in, I think we're stuck getting these people. We do have some great assets that young people would like. We just have to give them, we have to do the things and commit to the infill investment that's needed to give them opportunities to live in. Migration, brain drain, we've all heard this one too. We took the three counties, and you look at us, and this is Vandenberg, Warrick, and Henderson, come on, okay? And it's really not that bad when you look at it at face value. This is completely just move-ins. These are not people that this is not people that were born into. They're move-ins. They came into our community, migrated to this region. And you see, for the most part, with the exception of that 25 to 34 age group, we've had a net gain, and overall we've had a net gain. All right, and the difference between, say, the 15 to 24 and the 25 to 34 is about a net gain of 1,500 total over 10 years. Okay, so it's not a lot of people. And that's the most disturbing thing about this whole thing to me is we're just not getting many move-ins, albeit we're getting a few, and we're not losing. But it's really troubling to me. Okay. So I said, let's look at one that kind of, for the most part, was getting all positive. All right? Clark County. You all know that they get the Louisville move-outs. All right? But you also probably are not surprised to hear that that's stabilized a little bit, if only for the fact that they consume so much of Clark County. I don't know where else they're going to go. But for the most part, they're positive across the board. But for them, I would be alarmed similarly to Evansville in that their net gain is not that high. They are not now seeing the population soar like they did before. That particular metro area actually for a period of time was the highest growing in the state of Indiana. It stabilized somewhat, okay? But their alarming situations, a lot like ours, they're just not experiencing the growth that you would like to see and say, okay, Bloomington, you're okay. Alright? You look at that and you go, oh, well, that's bad. Wait a minute. Is it? Okay, for the most part, they're not seeing a significant move-in of most age groups. Pretty much flatline. But that big age group, you say, well, yeah, I mean, those are people coming into college and so on. That's about, give or take, with high school and college and stuff, 31,000 people. And they're seeing, see, they're having move-outs too. About 15, 16, 17,000 people. Do the math. That means in this area, they're growing, essentially, 15,000 to 17,000 over 10 years. Add that up for a while, okay? And those people have children, okay? So all of a sudden you say, and Bloomington, by the way, the metro area now is 80-some thousand people. And remember, we would talk about them as one of the smallest at just over 50. So they're growing, and it's kind of disappointing that we haven't done kind of similar growth yet. Okay. So, all I was trying to do, and maybe I'm preaching to the choir, I mean, I think many people do realize that there's a change that's happening. But ultimately, we're going to seed this with you, and we're going to turn around at 4 o'clock, and we're going to seed it again with the policy committee, and we're going to say, now, that type of situation is what should be driving Aaron and Craig and Sam and Vishu and Carrie and Laura and as they're planning, and Rob. That's what should be driving them when they're thinking about transportation planning well into the future. So that metro plan that's out for public involvement right now that you have all been a part of, these kinds of dynamics were on their mind as they were developing that plan. Here's what's going to happen next. We came to you today. We're going to the policy committee this afternoon. In February, we're going to meet one last time in each of the counties in a large public meeting setting and kind of throw out in front of them for one last opportunity for them to give us yes, no, have you thought about this, of what I'll call our pre-final draft plan. Okay, and it's big. It's a 4-volume, of course, one of the volumes is the metro plan. But we're going to get that in front of them and see if we're kind of hitting the mark in their respective counties. Then, on the last week of February, in fact, the 27th, I think, maybe we set that day, we're going to do a forum much like the Evansville Utility, Water Sewer Utility did on WNIN, helping to get people calling in and asking us questions. We're coming back to you in March, and you'll get what I'll call the final draft, because ultimately you and the policy committee will contribute one last time and have the opportunity to throw us some things that could change it to its final form, which will happen in April. We'll come to you and ask for you to adopt the resolution recommending that the policy committee adopt this, and then hopefully the policy committee will follow suit, and hopefully you will recommend. And then we're going to start celebrating because it's at that point in time the plan goes really live. The SEEK group, I should have mentioned this from the beginning, the Sustainable Evansville Area Coalition, is a 20-member consortium group that has basically pledged that they will take this and run with it. They fed it. Now they're going to live off of it. Every time they go after money, they're going to reach back to this plan and use it to support them. Hey, it's in here. We want this. Our community wants it, okay? So that's what's going to happen. That's the next test. Now, we're more than happy to talk to you about, ask some specifics, some questions. We hope that you guys are kind of anxious now to see it. We're just not going to show it to you. So if you want to ask some things,
so who are the 20 people on the...
Oh, man, I was afraid of that. Do you know them off? I don't think I brought them.
I mean, it's like, you know, Wellman Foundation and the Leadership Evansville, just all the agencies.
Each of the chambers.
Chamber of Commerce.
The planning, or the 3 planning commissions today.
Yeah.
The honorary of the Planning Commission.
They are, but Rob might not know.
Yeah. We kind of report.
I mean, you're on.
Authorities, which is a critical partner as well. Henderson has been incredibly engaged in this process. It's been fantastic. Vandenberg, multiple different ones have really grabbed hold of this and said, let's make this baby good. And Warwick is maybe not quite as much, but nonetheless, there have been a few key folks, the Paul Metcalfs, the Sherry Sharpens of the world, which have been great.
Just a couple things to elaborate on what they said. The candidate day for celebration, the mayor indicated he would like to have something, a big unveiling at the Forester. He's kind of talking, and at that time, we expect official, HUD officials, and possibly DOT officials from Washington to come to town to express interest. The other thing I would say, real quickly, when Carrie and I went to Washington, D.C. to the Sustainable Communities Conference last December, they indicated there that this SEEK, or the regional plan, are going to be viewed as very important components to grant applications and funding. So if Evansville or if our region, Henderson, Warren counties, and Vanderbilt are down here somewhere on the totem pole of grants and this is all kinds of federal grants, this having published this plan sort of elevates us, because why federal government wants to see results out of funding these regional plans. And they want to see things happen. They want to see projects. So they said that to any agency in any of the areas of their sustainable plan, if you don't put the fact that you're a sustainable community grantee at the very top of the executive summary of your grant applications, you're nuts. And so they said some communities have already submitted grant applications and they don't refer to this regional plan. They say that's very dumb. Am I right, Carrie? That's what the message you heard there too. So again, this, we hope this has impact for, you know, where the rubber hits the road, which is funding of projects and programs. It's not just something we think is going to be put on the shelf.
Well, we appreciate the chance to present.
Yes, thank you.
Anybody else have any questions for Dave or for Mike?
Thank you, guys.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you later.
Sam, do you have a problem? Let me go ahead and break it down here, and I'll try not to disrupt your meeting.
No, you can do it. That's fine. That's fine.
Okay, next on the agenda, we've got the 2040 Metropolitan Transportation Plan, approval requested, and Pam will present that.
Yep, we are here today to seek approval of our 2040 Transportation Plan. We've been through the process, as you know, because we've been here several times to talk to you about, and we can get your input on that process. We've completed our citizen input and public participation process. We have that closed on Sunday, this past Sunday. We did receive two comments that are in your packets and attached. One was to look at a possible interchange along I-164/I-69, which Campbell Square to provide access to the airport. And we committed to putting that on the illustrative needs project list, because there is not an identifiable funding source for that project at this point in time. And we'll continue conversations with NDOT about that project in the future. The second request was consideration to be given to Evansville on Mount Vernon Transit System. And Mount Vernon being the Cozy County is technically outside of our metropolitan plan area, which is what's covered by the transportation plan. However, we do have a rural contract to do planning in their area, and under that contract, we'll begin those conversations with Cozy County and see if they want to establish a transit system that could connect to that forward. Those are the only two comments that we received, and so we will be asking for your approval today. I do want to remind everybody that the plan has to get federal highway approval before it becomes an active plan, and we will likely not be able to get that approval until the state implementation plan, which is a document that identifies how our transportation plan has to meet the air quality standards. Until that plan is updated for our region, our transportation plan will not become effective. At this point in time, we anticipate the Federal Register notice to be on the SIP, or that state implementation plan, to be issued sometime this month. The effective date typically follows 60 days after that, so we're looking at least 60 days out from the time that's posted. And until we have the implementation plan approved and a metropolitan transportation plan approved and a conformity approved, all these things lined up,
we will not be able to do any PIP amendments. So the amendment process is kind of at a standstill until that time. Our anticipation is that all of those will be approved and our regular PIP amendment process will be up and running again in April. Until that time, if you have PIP amendment requests, you can continue to send them to us, and what we'll do is we'll collect them and we'll bring them to the March meeting and submit them so that they can be processed for approval concurrently with the FIPS and the transportation plan and the feasibility documents, so all of those things can line up, and then hopefully we'll have those all approved by April. So that's where we are.
There's a hard copy going around.
Okay. And we also have it at the end of the day today, when we get, hopefully get approval and we have signatures and everything, we will update the document that's out on our website too, so you'll be able to look at it there.
One thing in regards to the comments that you received, we had looked at an interchange at one point on Miller's Road. Spacing wise, you're supposed to have interchanges with 5 mile spacing in rural areas and mile in urban. Millersburg kind of split the difference between Boomerang Harmony and Lynch. And we had done some submittals to NDOT. And one of the problems we had was one of the primary considerations for a new interchange was that you had to show a problem at the existing abutting interchanges. We couldn't do that. Forecast didn't show problems at Lynch or at Boomerang Harmony. And that's what pretty well makes the idea of having one in Millersburg. So long story short, it'll probably be a long shot to get an interchange in Kansas, but at some point, you know, standards may change. So just wanted to let you know we had looked at those options before, whether this person who submitted the comment or not knew that. I don't know, but make aware of what we had done previously.
Kansas doesn't meet the timeline.
No, it's a mile and a half from Boomerang Harmony. So, no, it would meet the rural spacing, and be slightly over urban if urban boundary kept going out that far. But we'd still have to solve a problem out there in order to get the justification. And it floods out there, so. A lot of dirt on there. A whole lot of dirt required. Does anybody have any questions, comments for Pam regarding the long-range plan? Nobody has any questions? Is there a motion for approval?
I'll move to approve.
Got a motion? Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor of approval, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Thanks, Pam. Next up, we've got the air quality conformity document from Fishy.
Last month we presented to you the draft air quality conformity document, and we went through a public comment period, 30-day public comment period that ended this Sunday, January 5th. And we find the MTA confirmed with the ship numbers or the ship budgets, we call them. We ask for your approval to, approve the air quality document. But one point I want to make on the same line to Stan is that this document will not be approved by the federal agency until our SIP plan is approved by US EPA, which we intended to happen in March of this year.
Is there a baseline we have to meet?
Yes, the standards, if you look at the document on the last but one page, there is a table 5. Within the table 5, you see column 3 and column 5. It says SIP budget tons per year. Those are the numbers that we are not allowed to exceed.
So where are we at in relationship to like others?
We are better than what we are allowed to emit greenhouse gases through on-road emissions, which is basically vehicle emissions. And we look for PM2.5, which is fine particulate matter that is less than 2.5 micrometers, and which you see mostly with respect to vehicles, you see that in the gas pipe emissions, and then some from the wire, tire wear and tear through paints and all that kind of stuff. And so right now what we have is for 2015, the standard is 199.93 tons per year, and we are at 178.01, so we are better than what it is allowed. And for 2022, which is the budget year, that's 100.45, and we are 87.48, so that's less than the standard that's allowed to. And the years beyond 2022, we are supposed to not emit more than the budget year emissions. And if you look at the column going down, 2035, 35 plus, 40, 40 plus, they're all less than 100.45. So we have confirmed with the SIP budgets for PM2.5. The same way for NOx, which is to the next two columns, the allowed for 2015 was 5,642.95 tons per year, and we are at 499.504 for 2015. And 2022, it's 3,173.08. And in 2022, we estimate it to be 2,762.59. And if you go beyond 2022, also we are less than what is allowed. So.
This is following up on Ron's comment. In general, do we know how we compare to the next neighborhood, Mount Vernon or Louisville area or something?
No, I don't have those numbers, but I can look at their documents and bring them.
Just curious.
We will definitely be lower than Louisville, that I can say, because they are much more bigger than us, and they have more DMT, so more vehicles travel there, so there's going to be more emissions.
And when you set the SIP budget, it's not just the transportation. You've got point source, like for the power companies and other places. So the budget would be different for each region.
But Warren County is like half of ours.
Looks like they have less VMT. We've got almost 3 times more VMT than Warren County.
What do you see the point of time?
I think I'd like what I remember of the VMT for the county. 2010, Vanderburg showed up 5 million a day in mortgages, a little over 1 million.
That is one of the biggest factors, but other than that, if you compare Warren County to Vanderburgh County, you're expected to see more older vehicles in Vanderburgh County than Warren County, and then you have more trucks going through Vanderburgh County than Warren County. So the trucks, more dirty vehicles, you'll see more emissions. Less dirty vehicles, you'll see less emissions.
Hey, 10 or 15 years ago, we weren't even making a tank, really. And we were having major issues, right?
We are a tank now.
We are a
tank
now.
No, now, but yeah. 10 or 15 years ago, we were having a major problem.
Yeah.
So we've done a lot since then.
A lot. We are a tank, and we're in the maintenance status.
Any other questions? If not, then is there a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor of approving the air quality document? Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. So the old business, now under new business, we've got an issue again with the Evansville Regional ITS architecture.
The regional ITS architecture document is what we are updating. Actually, we first produced this document in year 2009, and since then We have currently planned for two ITS-related projects in our ship. So we needed to update the architecture documents, and so we updated the architecture documents, including those two new projects. And the two projects are the Ohio Street and Fulton Avenue signalization project, and they are modernizing the signal at both the ramps at Ohio Street and just north of the Lloyd Expressway. And then there is another signal interconnect project in the near downtown area, which is the project boundaries are Main Street to the west, Franklin to the south, Columbia to the north, and Garden Street to the right. There are a total number of 12 intersections, signalized intersections, and they are putting in new software to connect all those intersections. So that's an IDS project too. So we needed to update the IDS architecture document, and we have updated it, and we asked for your approval. And to update this document, we worked with Dave Savage at the traffic signal, Evans-Sylvander traffic signal control. And I have a hard copy of the IDS architecture document that will go down to pass to them.
Anybody have any questions? If not, is there a motion to approve the ITS architecture document? Got a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
All in favor of approval, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And next on the agenda, we've got public comment. Is there anybody? Any public comment?
I just wanted to mention something. We should have done that at the beginning. We've got some new faces on the committee that, you know, but you can do it at the end. That's fine. You can go around quickly.
Mike Vickers with American Engineers.
Mike Phelps with CHA Consulting.
Oh, that's not bad. It's another block here.
Okay, Brian with Norentio. Nara Lamb, Evans Norentio.
Rob Schaefer, Evans Norentio.
So, yes, you can say that Evans Norentio.
Craig Liston, as well.
John Schall, County Engineer.
Everything upstairs in the Development Coalition of Southwest Indiana.
Harry Aiken, Evans Norentio.
Vishulingala, Evans Norentio.
Mara Indot.